passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome in to yet another day. We're so glad to have you on board, and we have a lot to do, including some fantastic guests. So please stick around if you can. We'd love to have you keep you company for the next couple of hours. Let's get right to some headlines before our guests. And Anaya Smith says Alabama football game is more personal. Yep, it's serious business, as you can imagine. What did he have to say? He said, I know what Nick Saban wants, and we're going to mess that up. So if them boys don't have momentum for real, we're going to have to take that away immediately. Okay. Let's continue on as the fur is flying as we get ready. Bruce Feldman, Texas is back. Texas, at least in at last, is different as they get ready for the biggest game of the year in Dallas. Let's start with Ross Dellinger. And Ross, always great to have you back on the program. Before we get inside of football, let's talk a little bit about some of the meetings that have been going on recently and where we are with the CFP. We're bearing down pretty close to next year. What do we know? And has anything changed in spite of the entire landscape of college football being turned upside down? Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Paul. We had a week long of meetings in Chicago a couple weeks or so ago with CFP commissioners meeting, and then you had all the commissioners, all the Division I commissioners, all 32 gathered. Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, was there, and lots of discussion there. You know, everybody is. As you alluded to, wondering how the CFP will change given the realignment. And we didn't get many answers. Big surprise, but we didn't get many answers from those meetings in Chicago. I think a lot of eyes are still out looking west to see what happens with the Pac-2, if you call them that, the Oregon State and Washington State and their future. I think the big question is, Paul, will you have 9 FBS conferences or will you have 10 FBS conferences? So you could really have a 10th conference that is a 2-school conference. Oregon State and Washington State have been very clear that they're trying to preserve the Pac-12 brand, and they have 2 years, according to NCAA rule, they have a 2-year grace period to get back up to 8 members. And so they could go 2 years as a 2-school conference and still be recognized by the NCAA. The big question is, will they be recognized by the CFP? And I think that is the issue that is holding up any decision when it comes to a playoff format. As we know right now, there are six. It's a 6+6 playoff format. You have 6 automatic qualifiers that go to the 6 highest ranked conference champions. It's not a designated automatic bid for a specific conference. It's just the 6 highest ranked conference champions and then 6 at large. And the discussion is, if because of what's happened in the Pac-12, do you go 5 automatic qualifiers for conference champions and 7 at large? And I think they're trying to answer that question. In order to answer that question, you just need to know, are you going to have a 10th league at all, or will you have 9? And I think if you have 9, you go to 5+7. And I think there's somewhat agreement in that. But if you have 10, even though it might be a 2-school conference, ball, maybe they stick it out with the 6+6, and that would mean basically 2 group of 5 champions would get in the playoff.
How weird. But anyway, Ross, one other subject before we move to the current, and I mean, I'm literally watching on all 3 news channels right now what is happening in Washington, D.C., where the Speaker of the House is being overthrown by his own party. I bring that up not to get into politics, which I know you're pretty close to the Hill, is considering every time I'm on a college campus, which is every weekend, I talk to an AD or last week a president who tells me we still need to get Congress to intervene on NIL, and I'm watching this play out in real time, considering that the House of Representatives could be without a leader for weeks, if not longer. Where are we on NIL?
Yeah, we've said it for 40 years now, that Congress has a lot of other things going on, and that NIL is not necessarily, you know, atop the priority list. And I think this is probably a good example of that. I mean, I think that NIL is more of a priority maybe than it was 4 years ago, and probably more than it was 2 years ago. But, and there's certainly more knowledge about NIL and college athletics and what's going on the Hill than there was a couple years ago. But they've still got other issues to solve. And, we had the government shutdown stuff, right, going on over the last couple weeks. And now we have this, which, like you said, the House of Representatives, one of the two chambers of our runs our government, could be without a leader for however long. I don't know. It kind of seems like a mess. We're just peeking into my living room. My wife, who is a political reporter, is monitoring all of it from TV. It's quite messy. And you would think, again, that this is not going to bode well for any NIL legislation. I'll say this, I think last time I was on was about maybe a month ago or 3 weeks ago or so. We had these senators that spoke to a lot of athletic directors that were in town here in D.C. And we had there was a Democrat, Chris Murphy, in the Senate, a Republican, Ted Cruz, and kind of a middle guy in Joe Manchin that spoke. And it was fascinating to hear them speak. Ted Cruz said that there was he estimated there was a 60-40 chance, Paul, that an NIL bill would be passed in the next few months. And then Chris Murphy got on stage in front of the athletic directors and said, no, that's too high of a chance, and this is not a priority. So it was fascinating to see how each kind of body and each person representing that body, thought of the chances of any NIL legislation. It's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard to get something through, I think. And I think this whole speaker situation is just going to further slow things down. And then, Paul, you have presidential election cycle. And once that starts, a lot of legislation on Capitol Hill kind of slows to a crawl, especially legislation that isn't necessarily a priority. So I think there's going to be some frustrated college leaders for the next few months as legislation crawls. But I'll tell you this. Ted Cruz and Cory Booker, who a Democrat and a Republican, they've been working on, and they've been communicating, and their staffs have been communicating over the last several weeks. And Maria Cantwell, another Democrat, is also involved in those talks, and she's the chair of the committee that's going to move any legislation if there is legislation to move. So they've been communicating, and that's the first step in some kind of compromise.
Chatting here with Ross Dellinger and Ross with Yahoo, of course. Let me get to the field. You reported yesterday that the big game in Dallas will get a visit from the commissioner of the SEC. He has another site scoped out later in the day, also in Texas. But that is interesting, is it not, that Greg Sankey's heading to the OU-Texas game a year ahead of their entrance into the league?
It is. It's kind of unusual, right? You don't usually see a commissioner of one conference attend a conference game from another league. But obviously, these are unusual times, Paul, in college sports, as you know. Soon we'll have Washington and Rutgers playing a conference game, and Arizona and UCF playing a conference game. So these are weird times in college sports. And, you know, in a year or less than a year, right, about 10 months, Texas and Oklahoma will formally, officially be members of the SEC. So I think the SEC commissioner is going to go take a peek at what that rivalry is about and see it firsthand, and maybe go have a fried Oreo or two in the at the Texas State Fair. It's a really cool game environment. You know, it's always an early kickoff, 11 a.m. local time, central time there in Dallas, built around the state fair, held in the old Cotton Bowl. You know, I'm so glad they haven't moved that game. So it'll be really cool. It's kind of a throwback that the stands are split perfectly. You've got the burnt orange and then the crimson. It's just an awesome environment. I've covered it a couple times, and I'll be there again in Dallas this weekend. And yeah, so will Greg Sankey. So and what's funny, too, is that the commissioner of the Big 12 will not be there. Now, he'll see Oklahoma and Texas later this year, you know, playing games. I think he's seen Oklahoma actually earlier this year. So it's not like he's abandoning those two programs. But, you know, the fact that Greg Sankey will be there is very interesting. He won't stay to the end, as you mentioned. I believe he's jetting off to Texas A&M, Alabama to catch at least some or if not all of that game in College Station.
It must be nice, Ross, to be able to high top it around to all these top games while guys like you are looking for a parking spot.
Hey, they give us pretty good parking spots.
Well, it's great to talk to you. Ross Dellinger on the scene Saturday at the old Cotton Bowl. And I'm talking, it is old. We'll take a short break here. Mm-hmm. Much more to do on the programming. Oh, my goodness. I didn't realize Bratton was here. Alert the media. And Larry from Shelby, Bruce Feldman from The Athletic joining us on Texas Being Back. Travis Brown from out in Bryan, Texas. And Stinch will join us to preview the weekend.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back to our program, and we head to St. Louis, and Bill starts us off. Good afternoon.
Hi, Bill. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for checking.
All right. Yesterday, I believe you mentioned that you would put all the chips in the middle of the table concerning the Missouri-LSU game. And I was wondering what kind of chips they are. Were they sea salt and vinegar or regular potato chips? Or I want to know what to send you because I want to make that bet.
Well, I'm not even sure what I was saying. So can you help? Can you refresh my feeble memory?
Well, I thought you said that the LSU Tigers would take the Missouri Tigers to task.
I don't believe I ever said that, but
my apologies. I hope it's a good game, one way or the other.
I mean, one thing I try never to do is predict a game on Monday, so I'm relying on that precedent to tell me that I probably didn't say that.
Okay. All right.
I like tortilla chips with salsa, in case you want to send some my way.
I can do that, sir.
Wonderful. Thank you. John, do you remember any such statement? You're a pretty good listener.
None whatsoever, and I'm sorry Bill bought all those chips. I guess he's going to have to eat them now, right?
He may have been getting them for his good friend John in St. Louis.
Oh, John, the whiner, right. Hey, I'm pretty sure you're going to be at the Texas State Fair next year at this time, right?
I'm certainly hoping. I'm planning on it, whether I have to buy a ticket or can mooch off ESPN, but I'll be there.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a different perspective on Brian Kelly, but first I was just going to tell you, Calhoun's was great. You were right about the vibe and the ambiance
there.
And by the way, we went by Chesapeake on the way out for brunch the next day and looked at their menu, and they are the steak place that town. I will tell you this too, Paul. Tennessee was the loudest stadium I've been to. I've been to the Horseshoe. I've been to obviously the big house, and it was so loud that night. It's well worth
it's hard to be objective at this point because you've been to all these places, but I've always thought Tennessee on the right day at the right time of the year is about as unique a place as you'll ever be.
Just beautiful full moon, and the Notre Dame element of our four traveling party has already secured tickets for Notre Dame at Louisville this Saturday night.
My buddy Joe Tessitore will be there, so you'll have to make sure he gets the right place.
So here's my take on Brian Kelly. And by the way, hats off to Augie for taking the heat off of Brian Kelly yesterday. Agree?
I must turn down my meter when the paralegal comes on.
Yeah. You hear the ambulance chasing. Paul, anyways, here's my thoughts on Brian Kelly. First of all, I think when they did the handshake after the game, I think Lane Kiffin took that little target off his back and snuck it on Brian Kelly's back. But I think Legend was right when he said he's a good coach, but not a great coach. When you look at the record over there at Notre Dame, he was playing MAC teams. He was playing military academies, the lowlifes of the Pac-10, and sprinkling in a temple and a whatever. So I think he was a little bit overrated. And then he left for it to find a championship because he couldn't recruit. But his last 2 years there, Notre Dame was in the top 10 in recruiting. And they do take in transfers. Look at Hartman. So I think he essentially left to double his pay and to double the number of years of his contract. And he did that very well. But I think with Brian Kelly, he's just overhyped. I think he's a good quarterback. But bottom line is, I think he is who he is. He always will be. And he's a good coach, but doesn't deserve the hype and doesn't deserve the criticism.
Well, that's a fair analysis. I'm the host. You're the caller. I know I'm accused of being the head of the Brian Kelly fan club. But I'll leave it there. Daryl is up next in Louisiana. Daryl, what's everybody saying at the barbershop about Brian Kelly?
Oh, well, you know, it's been kind of quiet at the barbershop. They're pretty sad over the loss. And I got some bad news about TR. He's moving to Ruston.
So TR's moving to Ruston?
Yeah, his wife's an architect.
Oh, okay.
And she got a job at Louisiana Tech in the architect department, architectural department.
So is he going to open up a shop there?
He's already got a chair somewhere, told me. Well, but anyway, the good news is that there'll be no more soccer.
So does she.
Oh, yeah. But there'll be no more soccer on TV at the barbershop, and Paul Feinbaum will be on uninterrupted from 2 to 6 every day.
Yesterday, for example, if they had put on Oprah or Dr. Phil, they would have missed Brian Kelly.
That's true. Hey, you know, whenever you come to Baton Rouge, we got to bring a video camera to the barbershop.
Okay.
And
trying to figure out when we're going to get there. I'm looking at my trusty calendar here, and we're running out of time. Let's see. We got Auburn next week. I don't know if that's a prime possibility. Maybe Florida and A&M. That A&M game could be very big.
Yeah, I still like to pick you up at the airport and bring you over there.
Yeah, I know. I might even have them give me a little blow dry haircut.
Yeah, but listen, what I'm calling about is 34 missed tackles for 284 yards.
That's incredible.
And I was listening to the post-game show with Matt Lascona and T-Bob Hebert.
Yeah.
And T-Bob went to a bunch of lineman camps when he was in high school, and one of them was a defensive lineman at Coach Ogeron when he was at Ole Miss. And Coach Ogeron used to teach, when you line up, I want to put just the credit card in between your helmet and the offensive line's helmet.
Oh, wow.
Of course, that's an exaggeration. But T-Bob was saying we were playing a yard and a half off the ball. And he said, you're losing so much when you do that. And we're not getting any pressure anywhere. But in the guys, the players' defense, the offensive line coach that's coaching them now, he's not a full-time offensive line coach. He's filling in.
I heard Kelly say that yesterday when we were talking, and I wanted to, like, jump out of my chair. But why do you put someone in that position? I understand the circumstances. It's terrible, but isn't there someone you can find to put in that spot?
Yeah, Pete Jenkins.
Yeah, well, I mean, Pete Jenkins has been called out of the bullpen, I think, since Charlie Mack was coach.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, I mean, I guess he had nobody else, Paul.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's easy for me to sit here in a chair and make the personnel decisions for Brian Kelly, but I'm thinking about starting to do it next time I have the opportunity. Hey, thanks for the call. We're heading to a break. The Brat is coming up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Creeping along here into October, and always a good chance to, or good idea to bring back Michael Bratton from that SEC podcast just to see how some of the predictions are going. Michael, first of all, thank you for being here, and let's start with Georgia. People seem to be wondering what's wrong with the Dogs. We're heading to Athens this weekend. Give us a primer. Does this team look like they're capable of doing what?
Yeah, Georgia's not number one. Where have I heard that before, Paul? I mean, we got some smart people like David Ubbin finally coming around. But, Georgia is who they are, and I don't think they're the team to beat in the country. I don't even think, Paul, they're the number one team in the country. Now, will they have any problems with Kentucky? I doubt it. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that Kentucky wins this football game. They have played better than Georgia this season. So, I mean, the Dogs are not number one. They should not be. And I think anyone voting Georgia number one should have their vote taken away.
Okay. Some guys coming in here to get me to take my vote away. Michael, tell me about Missouri, because, I mean, there are a lot of people who say the right things about Missouri, but as soon as the camera's off, they start frowning and doing a clown face. So what do you make out of Missouri?
Yeah, and I don't get it, Paul. I mean, when they sign a five-star or land a five-star commitment, people complain, and it's because of NIL and this and that. I mean, I think what Missouri is doing, let's embrace it. I mean, we all complain that it's the same three or four teams in the playoff every year, and I'm not crazy enough to say Missouri is playoff bound at this point in time, but hey, they're one of the few undefeateds left in the SEC, so I'm embracing it. And I think the way LSU's defense is playing, they're going to do their part to keep Missouri undefeated for another week. And who knows, Paul? I mean, next week they go to Kentucky, and you may laugh at this, Paul, but I mean, heck, that could be like a playoff elimination game. Missouri at Kentucky. Who would have thought of that a month ago? I'm embracing it. Brady Cook, remember, they were booing him before the Kansas State game. Now they're propping him up for the Heisman, and I'm here for it.
Are you still here for LSU? I don't think you are, based on what you just got through saying. But there was a time when a lot of people thought LSU wasn't only the best team in the SEC, but maybe one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, only a fool would come on a show like this, Paul, and predict LSU would win the national championship. Heck, they might have three losses before the first week of October's up. And I think that's where they're headed. And, of course, I'm referencing myself being that fool, because I think I started that hype train. But it's just been horribly disappointing. I think they're wasting what is probably the best offense, and maybe even the entire country, but certainly the SEC right now, with Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, and Brian Thomas on the outside. They're unstoppable. The problem is their defense is, a mannequin at a store is putting up more of a stop than LSU's defense. I don't even know. I know they brought back Pete Jenkins and all this, but how Matt House, the defensive coordinator, still has a job after what we've seen the first couple weeks of the season, I'll never know. They are wasting a golden opportunity with Alabama being down. LSU should be the team to beat in the West, but the defense is not making it the case.
So where does the blame lie?
I think it's all on the defensive side of the ball, Paul. And to an extent, that's Brian Kelly's fault. He's coming out here saying, well, you know, we're in the middle of a rebuild and we don't have the pieces and we don't have experience. Well, they've added about a dozen transfers on that defensive side of the ball this offseason that have a world of experience. And it used to be known as DBU. Now it's DBU because I don't know who any of these defensive backs are. They can't stop anybody. They have the worst defense, I think, in the Power Five. If you look at the efficiency numbers there, not in the SEC, Paul. I said Power Five. The worst defense in the Power Five is in Baton Rouge, and again, it's a disgrace.
Michael Bratton with us. Let's get to Gainesville if we have to. Another just beat down, epic defeat. Billy Napier turns a page. Things seem to be all good. What do you make out of the Gators right now?
Yeah, I've been on a couple times this season, Paul. We're burying Billy Napier. We're crowning Billy Napier. We're back to burying him because, I mean, I can only imagine what Steve Spurrier's reaction was when Billy Napier said, hey, Kentucky, this is who we want to be. I mean, my God, they're used to beating Kentucky by 60 points. That's what it was when I was growing up. Now they're trying to beat Kentucky. That's disgraceful. And I said it before jokingly, but it's the truth, Paul. This weekend is a must win. With Vanderbilt coming into town, Billy Napier's not beating Vanderbilt. If they lose to Vanderbilt on Saturday, they might as well fire him on Sunday because I don't think they're going to win another game the rest of the way. The schedule's brutal, and he's 1-7 outside of the Swamp, Paul, and all their tough games are away from the Swamp. So I don't know how many more. They may be lucky to win 5 games this year in Gainesville.
Michael Bratton, let me move ahead. A couple other big games to there's the Gator schedule. You buried Nick Saban. You described his program as decaying. The dynasty's done. And I mean, I don't know where you were the last two Saturdays, but from my tired eyes, Tide looked pretty good.
Yeah, they look good against schools from Mississippi, Paul. I mean, what an accomplishment that is for Nick Saban and his roster that we were told was the best of all time. And this offensive line, you know, 5 guys that are 7 foot tall, 400 pounds, cannot be moved. Yeah, they did well against Mississippi State. Yeah, they after Lane Kiffin ran his mouth all week long, Lane Whiffen just delivered like he always does and just drops an egg in a big game. So I'm not impressed, Paul, and I hope you have not trademarked Decaying Dynasty because I'm in the process of doing that because people are going to jump on board with that come Sunday when Alabama loses by 2 touchdowns in College Station. They'll be eliminated from the playoff. I think they'll be eliminated from the West, and it'll be the first of many more conference losses that Alabama has this season.
Now, Michael, we've done this too many times for me to say stop the tape, but I have to ask you to stop the tape for just a second and make sure I come from the newspaper background. You know, we get your name, you spell it for us, and then we double check because that's who we used to be. We're not hot take artists. We're serious journalists. So one more time, Mr. Bratton, did you or did you not say Texas A&M is going to win this game Saturday by 2 touchdowns?
Yeah, and the final score may be 14-0, Paul, with this Tommy Reese offense. I mean, I don't want to bury Jalen Milroe because he's an incredible athlete. He's got a great deep ball, but that's about all they've got. And I put that blame on Tommy Reese because Milroe looks like a one-read quarterback in this offense. And against this defensive front of Texas A&M, I think they're going to have a field day, Paul. So 3, 6, 7 points may be enough to win this football game for A&M. I kid you not. I think first 1-10 wins. So I think A&M, heck, they may even win by more than 2 touchdowns. But, yeah, I like Texas A&M around 24-10, maybe 24-9, something like that.
I'm checking my schedule to see if I've left anyone out. I know we haven't talked. You mentioned Lane Kiffin. Was that his name?
Lane Whiffen, yeah, that's what we call him. What a wonderful win there against LSU that's already lost a couple games now this season. But I'm not buying into their hype either. I get it. Their back's against the wall. They had to win that game. They did it, so let's credit them. But where was that against Alabama when you really needed it, when you had a chance to assert yourself? They still go to Georgia. They still got to play A&M. They've got some tough games remaining. I just don't have confidence in Lane Kiffin, but I do find him entertaining. So I hope he can win a couple of these games, keep him off the hot seat, because he makes my job a lot easier.
Michael Bratton from That SEC Podcast. We'll see you soon, Michael. Book it. We'll take a break right now. More of your phone calls and your reaction to that right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show Podcast.
We are back, and let's continue with more of your phone calls. Always reaction to Brat when he is on the show. Stacy is up next from Birmingham. Hey, Stacy.
Paul, do you have a mirror in front of you? Can you see your?
I do have a monitor that I can see myself in.
Well, you should have saw the look on your face when Michael Bratton said what he said. Paul, do you agree with him?
No, I don't agree with him.
Enough of that. But I want to talk about
I don't agree with everything he said, but Stacey, I just can't help but laugh when he says all those things.
Oh, my God. I don't know if he's been asleep or if he's been hanging out with Pete Golden. I don't know what's going on. Last thing before I get out of here, Paul. Anais Smith, did you see that interview, his little thing he did today?
Which interview?
The Texas A&M player.
I don't think I saw that.
He said he know what Nick Saban want to do. He's going to
personal. Yeah, Smith. I did hear about that, yes.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what Bama did to Leonard Fournette?
I think Leonard got 31 yards.
There you go. So here go Anais Smith. So we'll see him Saturday. And I call you back afterwards, and we'll talk about that. But I want to see Jimbo talk 100 miles per hour to explain that.
He'll do it. Hey, thank you very much, Stacey. You be well. Augie is up next. Good afternoon, Augie.
Hey, Paul, do you let people pick you up from airports, callers?
Usually. Only in Baton Rouge.
I was going to say, you might be worried that maybe the next guy that picks you up is like a John Wayne Gacy fan or something like that. We don't see you again.
Well, I mean, it's always a little dangerous getting in cars with people, but I've done it before.
You're a brave man, Mr.
I mean, if I think I'm going to save $5, I'll get in a car with anyone.
I did that in New York once.
I had some guy that he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Manhattan." He said, "Oh, just get in the car." And I got in the car with him.
And you ended up in some basement on Long Island, right? Well, you might need to take Brands around to be a driver, because that's not a good practice, Paul. We want you here so we can rant about games on Monday after their debacles on Saturday. But did I hear John from Louisville call the Academy's lowlifes?
That's exactly what he said.
Oh, my God. But, Paul, I do have to straighten something out. That guy from Missouri, you did say all your chips were on LSU, and that was in a conversation with me yesterday.
Yeah. Okay, well, I thought I said, maybe I did, and I'm, it's not like I can remember everything that's happening, but just between, Augie, between the two of us, that's probably what I said.
Okay, I won't spread the word.
That's off the record, though, okay?
No problem, it's not on the record. But Bratton says LSU sucks, the worst defense in the Power Five. And your question to him was, who do you criticize? And you were basically saying it's BK's fault. Now, when I say it's BK's fault, you jump all over me.
Well, what I don't understand about BK, I really don't understand this logic. I understand the guy's sick, one of his coaches, but you don't put someone in that position that's unfamiliar with it. That's not a good excuse.
For a guy making $10 million a year, which is 157 times. Yeah, and to have the pedigree that you're impressed with, I mean, I think it's good, but I just don't see the guy as great. How can he be such a poor manager and you still have that much faith in him?
I refuse to answer that question on the grounds that it may incriminate me.
Now, let me tell you the real problem with LSU sports in general. It's idiots like that moron from Houston who calls in to criticize me, this idiot Jay from Louisiana who says, oh, that guy's a yak. these people seem like they have some kind of close relationship with LSU's staff that they don't want to offend them, and they keep them hanging around for years after we're drugging the dirt, and all of our opposition just laughs at us because we're such idiots for keeping people around. We should have cut Olosa a year sooner than we did. This is the problem with LSU. We settle for mediocrity. People in Alabama wouldn't do that. They're calling for Saban's head because he loses to Texas, and we're getting stomped by these teams like Ole Miss, and people are making excuses for BK, but it's not the entire LSU fan base. I can tell you that, like T-Bot Hebert, you ever listen to this guy's show, he's on top of it. And it's time that BK either wake up or he needs to move on. Anyway, Paul, I'll be calling you on Monday, my friend.
Thank you very much. I can't wait. Tim is up next in Arkansas.
Hey, Paul, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
So I do have a question about Arkansas and KJ Jefferson's kind of future and possible transition into the NFL. And I also have a fairly important question I've been wanting to ask you for a while about kind of your career. So I will talk about Arkansas first. KJ kind of reminds me a little bit of, oh God, what was his name? The Syracuse quarterback that played for the Eagles, Donovan McNabb. I know he's not as skilled as Donovan, but I think if a good NFL quarterback's coach gets a hold of him and makes him a little more fundamentally sound in the pocket, I really feel like he could transition well, and I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Unfortunately, Tim, we are literally about to run out of time. We will continue this soon. Thank you very much for the call.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.